visiting HawkeyeDrive.com, your stop for Iowa football and men's basketball content. I'm Brendan Stiles, and welcome to our seventh edition already this season of the Talking Hawks podcast exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. As I am every week, I'm joined by former Iowa defensive back Chris Rowell. And Chris, I guess we'll just start off by, as I usually do, getting your thoughts on what you saw last Saturday, Iowa being able to beat Minnesota rather decisively and bring Florida Rosedale back to Kinnick Stadium to Iowa City.
I was pretty impressed for the most part. Of course, through the first half of football last week, the second half was kind of a stalemate where we started off pretty kind of fast in the second half, getting a turnover, and then after that everything went downhill to where it seemed like we actually just wanted to sit there and just get out of this game right away. But just like always, Mark Weissman is he's playing a heck of a year this year so far. The passing game in the first half looked good. It was a pretty balanced attack. I enjoyed what the defense did here for the most part throughout the whole game until like the last drive and a half or so, when they gave up 100 yards rushing and then they end up giving 300 yards total. But I was pretty impressed overall at the game.
You know, it's funny because you and I both were sitting there last week when we were dissecting this game, and we're thinking, okay, it's one of those games that just kind of comes down to the basics, who can run the ball better, who's going to force the turnovers. And Iowa was able to do all those things, To me, I think the thing that's going to get – a lot of people will discuss the offense tonight, and we will as well, but you mentioned the defense. I think that's really a story that's kind of getting overlooked here, because you consider the last few weeks prior to Saturday – they had struggled early on in games. They were giving up touchdowns early on, and they were having to find ways to make adjustments on the fly. They didn't really have to do that, because you get that play from Tanner Miller on Minnesota's fourth play from scrimmage, and really I think that set the tone for how the rest of the game was going to shape out, because it just seemed like from that point forward, Max Shortell, Minnesota's quarterback, he just looked like a deer in headlights after that, And I don't know if it was the fact that they were playing on the road or just Iowa's things that Iowa's defense was doing maybe differently from what they had seen on film. But to me, I feel like that play ultimately set the tone for how this game was going to shape out, because it's a time that you get that turnover, and as you know, it's something that could really boost your confidence as a defense, especially when you've had those early on issues early on in games. And you fast forward it, the second quarter obviously is when the offense gets it going and plays, in my opinion, probably the best quarter of football they've played all season by far. But then, again, you go back to the defense. They held Max Shortell. I think he ended up with decent numbers, but in the first half, he was 4 of 11 passing for 32 yards. And that wasn't something that I don't think either of us were necessarily anticipating as far as his numbers looking. But from that point forward, Minnesota became kind of one-dimensional offensively. And the defense, Darian Cooper was even saying it after a game, he liked the fact that they were able to just pin their ears back as a D-line and be able to get after Shortell. And then they did get a couple more turnovers. You had Greg Castillo coming away with a pick after I think it was a few plays after the pass interference that was called on him. And then Christian Kirksey, of course, with the pick six that kind of sealed the deal. So there was that. I thought it was a very impressive win for Iowa. And again, as far as the offense goes, I don't know if it was the best game that they played by far, but I will say it was the best quarter, the second quarter, when they had those three touchdowns. That was easily the best I've seen them look all season at any point. And I just got to share with you, too. It was kind of funny because the game was well in hand to the point that I was able to actually get down on the field and get some video at the end. And this is one of the few times normally I'm standing on the Iowa sideline if I do it. I went over to the Minnesota sideline because I knew that's where Florida Rosedale was going to be. And as soon as I noticed the offense recovered that onside kick and took the field, my first instinct was, okay, James Ferentz is definitely going to be the first guy coming towards the pig. So the second they snap the ball, take the knee, I see him making the cut, and I immediately start backing away while I'm holding the camera up so that way I could get them all running after it. But it was just a crazy scene. But it was definitely a game I think Iowa it was a complete game for them, you know, across the board. And I feel that that was something that they needed to have, especially going into their bye week.
Yeah, I was going to say, to go on what you're saying, that Gary Kill and not only some of their players said it was a game of deer in the headlights, but at the same time, it can't be a game of deer in the headlights. You know, you're a 4-0 team. You're playing against a familiar foe here in Iowa on a road on top of you had Florida Rosedale here for the last 2 years. So it's just one of those deals, like you say, it's a possibility of deer in the headlights, but you're a team that beat this team the last couple years, and you know you did it pretty impressively, you know, blanking us 2 years ago, and then last year a comeback win. And these are the same guys that played on both of those teams, you know, for the most part. A lot of these older guys, but like you said, Iowa just went out there and they wanted the game more at the end of the day. And I just feel that it's just a big confidence booster for the team, you know, after losing a week before, and you know, going into the bye, you know, that's what, and I'm sure that we'll talk about the bye here. We got to beat the bye once again.
Yeah, and going back to the defense here for a second, how much of it do you feel is just kind of what you were saying here just now, that they just had more energy, and how much of it would you say was completely different from what you had seen in previous weeks? Like, what were some of the things that you noticed?
It's not so much some of the things that I noticed, you know, on defense. You know, Minnesota went out and they tried to pass on us quite a bit here, and they weren't so lucky in the first half, and but the second half, they were forced to, just because they had a big hole that they had to come back. And you can't really run the ball because time was not on their side. But the defensive line played pretty strong. The linebackers, as always, they don't give up much. When they do have someone come out there, is it a fullback, a linebacker, or either some receiver screen or so. And one thing, let's not forget that Minnesota were missing one of their best players, you know, on offense, and it's their quarterback. But at the same time, it's no excuse, because this guy at quarterback had also played. So you have to give our defense pretty good credit here, because they played their butts off, and they played a full game. And a lot of people can't say that they struggled quite a bit. But like you said, you have to give those guys a lot of credit, just because they didn't play from behind.
Mm-hmm. And then looking at the offense, you mentioned obviously Weissman having another big game. I think this week, more than any, what stood out to me was just the way the offensive line looked, because obviously you could sense progression with them, because obviously the first week against Northern Illinois, they had the issues at pass protection. Then came the Iowa State game, they did better there, but they struggled running the ball. And then the last 2 weeks, they against UNI Central Michigan, they were able to get a little bit of both going. And then it just seemed like last Saturday, they were just opening up huge holes for them. And it wasn't even just them, too. It was just, you know, the tight ends, receivers, Brad Riders. It just seemed like everybody, going to the phrase, doing their job, it seemed like everyone was just able to do their job. And you consider, too, that they were down a man on the O-line. They had Austin Blythe out, and they put Andrew Donald in there at right guard. Yeah, I got to say, I was very impressed with what I saw from that group, especially on that left side where you have Brandon Sheriff, Matt Tobin, and then you could, I guess, even include James Ferentz there at center. It just seemed like those guys, once they got a hat on somebody, that they just were not going to let go. They were going to continue on and allow Weissman to get to that second level.
Yeah, I was going to say, the only negative you can really take out of our offense, and a lot of people would sit here and agree with me, is a couple passes that James thrown, you know, mm-hmm. too high, too far, whatnot. But James, he'll get it together. He has 2 weeks here to get it clicking with the receivers and running backs. And also, you know, the offensive line continue to pass block and so on, because we have pretty much had the run game down pack, but we want to be able to open up and be able to go into our next Big Ten game here in 2 weeks and be able to say, hey, we actually figure some things out and polish some of the things going here for the long run down the stretch. Now is I actually feel that the bye came at a pretty good time, to be honest with you. I know it's going to be brutal the last couple of weeks, but at the same time, that it, you know, maybe another week or so just going downhill. But at the same time, we got to beat October, and that's one of the hardest months that we always had here in our program.
I'll ask you to elaborate on that here in a little bit, but the other two things I just wanted to make mention of as well regarding the offense. One, the one touchdown run that Mark Weissman had, you know, obviously they ran to the left side and mentioned how those guys all played well. the tight ends, I thought that was the best game that they as a group played as well. And then on that touchdown run, the one guy I think that deserves some credit as well is Ray Hamilton, because he was lined up on the outside, got his guy, allowed Weissman to cut to the outside there and get in the end zone. And then to that point, you saw Jake Doozy, redshirt freshman. He got a lot more playing time this past week. And, you know, obviously CJ had that big catch early on in their opening drive. I think that allowed him to become more of a factor. And I got to ask you now, because that flea flicker. Ferentz said after the game that it's something that he didn't seem to recall Iowa using much, if at all. I think he said the last time they used it was back in 01. When they had Dallas Clark, and I'm not sure. I would imagine McCann was a quarterback at that point in time. But they're dating themselves back to then, my question for you is, any time that you went up in practice, did you ever go up against a flea flicker in practice at any point with any quarterbacks, any running back? Like, do you ever remember that being used just once?
Not at all. I think the 5 years I've been here, not at all. I've never seen a flea flicker ever, regardless on the defensive side or on the offensive side at all in practice. A lot of reverse passes and screens and things like that. And I think Statue of Liberty once with Drew Tate, but for the most part, I've never seen a flea flicker ever executed in practice or either just ran at all.
It's interesting you say Statue of Liberty or Drew Tate, because I think Boise State used that after Drew Tate would have played for you guys, or like that around that same time. So it's interesting that they had that in their back pocket. But I just asked because, like, I don't ever remember it being used. And I would imagine that that's something that when you saw it, I would imagine, one, it caught you off guard. And then, two, you see Jordan Cotton as wide open as he was on that play once Vandenberg got the ball back.
But I was going to say that has a lot to do with Mark Wiseman being successful and how successful season he has so far, you know. And a lot of people sitting here, hey, man, this guy is in the game. We know they're going to give us a nice heavy dose of him. And it's just so many people have so much attention to him, is able to open up to Jordan Cotton, to a Cavante, Martin Manley, to our tight ends finally now. But I was going to elaborate. This is now Greg Davis going to where he had a Vince Young and Colt McCoy here in his offense. So he's able to open up a little bit here and show the fans a couple things, you know, outside of sitting here, hey, it's the same offense as Ken O'Keefe, you know, short passes and so on, and a lot of running game. But I think this game has really – made Greg Davis say, hey, let me open up my offense here and be able to show a couple different things. Now people not only sit here and prepare for Mark Wiseman and a couple short passes, let's get some complexity to this offense.
And Weissman, too, after the game, was saying how not only has he felt like he's been able to take advantage of what the O-line and his guys in front of him have been able to provide him, but he also feels like he's starting to see the holes better than he was even a couple weeks ago when he was starting to get carries against UNI at Central Michigan. And, you know, it's interesting you bring up Greg Davis, because this was a week Ferentz, for whatever reason, decided to just stay completely silent. Usually he'll still do the teleconference with the Big Ten during the bye week, but he didn't this year. He had Phil Parker do it. And then Tuesday, both Parker and Greg Davis is the one time during the season, or at least during the regular season, that we in the media actually got a chance to talk to these guys. And Greg was asked about James Vandenberg and the fact that, okay, through five games, he only has two touchdown passes. And you mentioned how it's something where the offense is going to start opening up now because of the success you have with Weissman. But he also made this comment regarding Vandenberg, and I want to get your take on this, is the fact that he's also been willing to make checks down to run plays, in particular in the red zone when the opportunities have been there. He mentioned how against Minnesota that there were, he said, about five occasions where Vandenberg could have thrown the ball if he wanted to, but because of what the defense was providing, they were like, you know what, let's just run the ball, whether it be with Weissman or Rodgers or what have you.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, it's just one of those deals where you have a veteran quarterback here has been in the program not only, you know, the last 2 years of playing, but also being around with Rick and things like that. But a lot of the dart check plays were passing when Coach O'Keefe was there or whatnot. So I think James has become very comfortable with the offense. And like you say, I mean, when you got Mark Wiseman out there, why not give him the ball? But, you know, with Garmin and Bullock, and those guys become healthy here, it can be a nice deal where you can sit here and be like, okay, these other two guys in here, they might pass the ball, you know, may run the ball. So we're in a pretty good position this week. You know, hopefully the guys get healthy. a lot of guys that's banged up here and so on. But I feel that Greg Davis has – I think of all people, he has to take advantage of this bye week to be able to get these guys healthy and get the offense running here.
Now, looking here at this bye week that they have, it's not quite the halfway point for this team, but just about the halfway point in the season. To this point – would you say that things have gone about the way that you would have expected for the most part? Have there been things besides the fact that they lost that game to Central Michigan? Has there been anything else that's maybe surprised you more than you would have anticipated when, you know, you're looking at this team back in August?
Outside of the wins and losses, yes. The reason why I say that is because I didn't think our offense would be as explosive, you know, of past years or some things like that. But I am shocked about James Vandenberg's touchdowns. It's kind one of those deals you scratch your head and like, wow, this guy had more touchdowns last year, of course, at this point. But, you know, with a new offensive coordinator and a new defensive coordinator, you sit here and you have to learn on the go. And practice is practice, you know. You get sit here and get the reps and be able to get ready for these games. But, I mean, actual gameplay with these plays and things like that, you don't know until you actually play these games. But I'm shocked about James Vandenberg's touchdowns. Also, just the tight ends being involved in a passing game outside of blocking. And like you say, from what I've seen with my own eyes, most of the successful plays of late has been with Ray Hamilton being somewhere around the ball, blocking or passing the game or whatnot. Also, like you say, we're running three tight ends now, so that's a pretty good thing. But I think now our receivers get a chance to sit here and focus going back to the basics, and then, you know, our defensive backs being able to get some rest a little bit, you know, the starters or whatnot, get some of the younger guys out there, practice heavy for the most part. And I know that's what the team is doing right now. A lot of starters probably get a lot of reps in the first half of practice, and then next thing you know, the coach is letting them go home pretty early and let the Minuteman guys, and the Minuteman guys, we call the guys, the freshmen and the two deep guys, sit there and get some work there for the most part while some of the coaches still recruiting, or if coach said, hey, let's focus on us this week or whatnot. So it's a pretty good week here for the future of the Hawkeyes or whatnot, you know, going into the late season and early season next year. But I really feel that we should be able to fix a couple of things that we've been sitting here scratching our heads. But I feel our strength is special teams, and I'm sure you'll sit here and agree with me in a way. But that's one thing where I sit here and say, hey, man, surprise.
I think that, to me, is probably the one surprise here is that Mike Myers had this season that he's had. He didn't have to do a whole lot this past week, but to this point, what he has been able to do for them has been huge. You know, you think back to the Northern Illinois game, making four field goals there, and then against Central Michigan, made that kick against the wind. He's been a key part of their success. I agree. As far as wins and losses go, aside from that loss to Central Michigan, which I don't think anyone saw coming, I'm not completely surprised at all at what I've seen. And as a matter of fact, you know, if anyone of you who is listening to this, listen to our first podcast at the beginning of the season, one of the things that I said was the first couple weeks, I expected the offense to kind of get off to a slow start. And just mainly because I still think that, you know, while they are getting better at learning the system, you got to also be able to see it in actual games. And given the type of competition they were going up against, I felt like, okay, there's still going to be some issues early on that they're going to have to iron out. And they're going to have to rely on their defense. You know, the defense played a big role in them beating Northern Illinois. And they played well enough to beat Iowa State. Obviously, that was a game where the offense not being able to do its part ended up hurting Iowa. But, you know, by the time they got to that Northern Iowa game, I said that would probably be about the point that you'd start to see the offense start picking it up. Now, I didn't expect Mark Weissman to be the focal point of that, but they've gotten to that point where they're scoring about close to 30 points per game since then. Now, you know, granted, part of that's a competition, but also part of it is, you know, they're starting to know their roles better. And as I said earlier, they're starting to do their jobs better as a result. Defensively, I think the thing that has kind of caught me by surprise is just the defensive line, as far as not so much their ability to play, but the fact that the guys, that how they've been using rotations and who's proven to be really effective. You look at a guy like Joe Gaglione, for instance. I don't know how, when we were discussing this unit, I don't know how much of a factor I thought he would end up being at this point. I think he's been a huge factor, if not probably one of the better players up front on that D-line this year. to me, I definitely think that there's some areas where this team can get better and can get, and there could also be areas where they take a step back. But overall, I'm not completely. There's been bits and pieces I've been surprised by, but not. As far as the grand scheme of things go, it's not a complete surprise to me.
I was going to say, well, one thing a lot of people sit here, you know, going to the season, just like you said, with our defense, is that our defense is the top 15 defense in the country here, takeaways and things like that. But let's, you know, more on the offensive side, I am very surprised about our third down conversions. Mm-hmm. That's my biggest surprise, to be honest, when you look at a stat and things like that. Like, how can we not? But for the most part, when you're at third and five and, you know, forever. Also, that's when you're not really giving yourself a chance to sit here and be successful on third down.
So now you said that you think that this bye comes at a good time for this team. What makes you feel that way? And I ask because I know last year when we had this discussion around the bye week, you felt that that didn't necessarily come at a good time for them when they were before they were getting ready to play at Penn State.
Well, the reason why I sit here and say that is because you're dealing with a younger team. We just came off a bigger win. A big win against Minnesota, bringing Floyd back. You know, it's a big confidence booster after the week before you had a big letdown. If you lose to Minnesota, you know, you sit here and you scratch your heads like, we need to get ourselves back together, you know, or either we can go uphill or downhill. You know, we win a good game on a good note here after losing, like I said, losing a tough game. But, yeah, it's one of those deals. It can be a confidence booster. You got 2 weeks to sit here and work on your basics and things like that. And for a younger team, you don't really want to get a bye week at the end of the season. You sit here and you regardless of the wins, losses is on the losses side, favor the losses side. You're sitting here like, that's the end of our season. Well, what's the use for a bye week? Let's get out of our misery and so on. But usually if we got a good bye week in the middle of the season, you know, either a 50-50 team or a younger team, this will help out a lot. You know, you get a lot of rest for the guys and sit here and say, hey, guys, we now this is where we sit here and get some rest, get ready for the downhill, the schedule and things like that. And we got some tough opponents here, you know. You got Northwestern coming up, Michigan State, you know, here down the road. And, you know, this is where we figure out our team. You know, a lot of fans are sitting here like, oh, they beat Minnesota, undefeated team of Minnesota, but they haven't really played anyone yet. Like we both sit here and talk about. But like I was going to elaborate on what you said, that we could have easily been 3-2 just like you, like we see. You know, I mean, we both seen that it can be 50-50 with Iowa State, but with Minnesota winning the last two games, it could have won either way. And just like you said, it could have been a 5-1 record, 3-2, mm-hmm. 4-2, whatever it was.
I know I'm kind of hedging my bets here, but I think I have mixed feelings as far as this bye week and the timing of it for this team, because defensively, I think it comes at an okay time. I'm not going to say here it's perfect, but I think considering the fact that next week they are going up against Michigan State, they are going up against a team that's going to run the ball at will with Le'Veon Bell, I think this is a good opportunity for the defense, especially the D-line, to be able to be fresh and, you know, allow themselves to go into that game fresh. And you consider the rotations that they've been using. They have a chance where, you know, if they could, you know, keep Michigan State's offense in check, the team overall will be able to hang with them, and they won't be completely fatigued by the time you get late into the third quarter or into the fourth quarter of that game. So I think from that standpoint, I think it's pretty good timing for the defense. And the factor in, too, they did have some issues there in the second half on a couple of drives that Minnesota had, but they can clean those up. And if they could have first halves like they had last week, then I think they'll be in pretty decent shape going forward. Conversely, I will say I think that the timing couldn't be any worse for the offense as far as this bye week. And the reason why I say that is, and look, I know Greg Davis, it's different from Ken O'Keefe in this, but you think about the fact that this offense over the years, there have been issues coming out of bye weeks, and a lot of it's kind of stemmed with the offense. You go back to last year, they scored 3 points against Penn State, even though they had 2 weeks to prepare. You go back to 2 years ago against Michigan. Yes, they ended up winning 38-28, and they had a 38-7 lead, but they were down 7-0 going in, like, into the second quarter of that game. So they were slow coming out of the gate before they busted things open. Your junior year, when you guys played Illinois, you were able to come back and tie the game before Illinois won the last-second field goal. But before that, you guys were down 24-9, and the offense up until the fourth quarter had issues moving the ball. I just feel like this is something you combine that with the fact that this offense, I feel like, has been starting to click these last few weeks. I would feel like, and I'm sure you would agree as being a former player, that when things are going right for you, you want to keep playing. You don't want to have a game off or a week off. And I just feel like with this particular game coming up against Michigan State, where this is probably going to be the best defense they play this entire season, it's definitely going to be the best team they've played at this point defensively. I just feel like you cannot afford to have any sort of rust early on in that game, because if you do, then suddenly it's going to get to a point where they could pin their ears back, and it's going to be a lot harder to get Weissman involved, and it's going to be harder for Vandenberg to look downfield. You're going to have to rely more on your passing game, and that's been an area that has had some concerns. So I think from that standpoint, and granted, part of it's going to have to is going to depend on how they utilize this bye week, but I think that defensively this comes at a good time, but offensively, I'm not sure about the timing of this, especially considering who they got coming up.
Yeah, I was gonna agree with you. As a player, you don't want a bye week, you know, depending on your momentum and right. Things like that. You know, as a player, yeah, if I'm banged up or, you know, you're tired, your body's tired or whatnot, yes, you look for a bye week. But at the same time, as a player, when we didn't have bye weeks the first couple of years of my career here, it's just like, oh, you know, let's keep going. Regardless of the actual record, you sit there and you want to keep going on, not only get the season over with, but it's just one of those deals. You sit there and be like, all right, we got some momentum here. Or either, hey, we got a chance to get back after this loss and things like that. You don't want to sit here and moan on a loss or a victory like, hey, you're feeling good. Next thing you know, that bye week could pretty much just flatten out everything, because you're basically going back to camp time and you start thinking about spring ball. And it's just like, okay, we don't have anything at the end of this week outside of rest and being able to watch other teams play here. But it, like you say, it's just one of those things you scratch your head about. But, you know, with the Big Ten going into Thanksgiving break, it's just one of those deals you sit there and you're like, oh, gosh. And everybody want to get their rest for a bowl game and so on. I think it's crap. But at the same time, it's one of those deals where, with rest and things like that, with the Big Ten losing, with Ohio State losing the national championship and so on, talking about how much rest, you know, you can use rest at the same time, because the kids do have to go back to school and study here and get ready for exams.
And obviously, you know, they know well out in advance when their bye week is going to be. So, of course, they're going to be like, yeah, this comes at a good time for us and we can get caught up on all these other things. But I just feel like I don't – and just to clarify, I'm not sitting here and saying that the offense – is going to go back to square one next week, because obviously they're going up against a really good defense. But I just feel like this is something where if they do take a step back, it's going to be a lot harder for them to get it going again against Michigan State. And my concern with that going forward would be, if they can't get it going after this bye week, are they going to be able to – is there going to be a point where they get back to where they've been these last few weeks as an offense? So I think that's the – key thing there. And going back to the fact that Greg Davis was talking, one of the things I asked him, actually it was the one question I did ask him yesterday or on Tuesday at his press conference, was just how they handle a bye week and at what point they start prepping for Michigan State. And because I know you being a former player, and you've mentioned to me in the past how this week is pretty much always been about focusing on Iowa, focusing on, you know, developing the younger guys and just working on fundamentals, techniques, and all that sort of thing. So that way you're crisp and ready to go the following week. But he mentioned that the coaches have already started looking at Michigan State, and that they would introduce Michigan State, and maybe not necessarily the entire game plan, but they would at least give an introduction later in the week. And then eventually give the game plan around the same time that they typically would. Do you think that that's an effective strategy as far as when you're dealing with a bye week and you know you got a big game coming up?
But well, for the most part, no. That's what they did when I was actually playing. You know, you get the younger guys working and things like that. And you know, hopefully towards the end of the week, you know, that them last couple of days or so, you want to get a jump start on the next team. You know, it's usually a Thursday to be able to let them think on a weekend at the same time they're watching games or whatever they're doing for the bye week, for the weekend where they have off free. You sit here and like, oh, we got Michigan State this week. You know, we've seen some film. They're going to show film of Michigan State this week, without a doubt. But at the same time, they're going to sit there and look there as a team. They're going to look at this film from last week and also some film that they get from practice here. It's mainly for younger guys. But at the same time, they're going to get they're not going to get their playbooks right away, but they're going to get this film a good heavy doses, and I'm sure a lot of guys actually seen a lot of what Michigan State done against Ohio State this past week, but now they get a chance to sit here and watch Michigan State this week, so they're going to grasp a good dose of Michigan State here, and it's just one of those, like you say, you don't put the game plan in this week,
okay,
but you usually try to get it towards the end of the week for those guys to sit there and think about Michigan State. Have them in the back of their head of not only that it's, you know, it's their free weekend, but, you know, right, you still say, hey, we still have a game next week.
Right. Well, and the reason why I ask you that and kind of bring it up is just because I think back to when Iowa did play Central Michigan. Central Michigan was coming off of a bye, and their head coach in their conferences, in the MAC teleconference, he said point blank, yeah, you know what, we spent that entire bye week, you know, prepping for Iowa, preparing for Iowa, and game planning for Iowa, you know. So to me, I feel like obviously there's different ways you can do it, but I don't know if there's necessarily, if there's a right way or a wrong way as far as how you go about that. Because I would think that if you're a team, especially you look at Central Michigan, obviously proved beneficial to them, but I guess it could also depend on the opponent and who you're playing too, but it just seems like with a game like this and in this scenario, I don't know where, I'm not sure it wouldn't hurt for them to, you know, maybe if there was a situation where they had the game plan installed, say, late Friday instead of on Monday or Tuesday, whenever the players usually get it, like for in a normal week.
Usually, it's usually something like that. Are they practicing? No, they're usually doing walkthroughs.
Okay.
And that's how it is usually. It's usually walkthroughs, just trying to get the guys familiar with these formations and things like that. Like I said, for the special teams, Coach Urban, Coach Wilson always had that stuff ready to go right away with special teams. Coach O'Keefe, I know Coach O'Keefe used to do a lot of walkthroughs with the opponents that we have coming up the next week, and instead of just sitting here and doing Iowa versus Iowa, because Iowa versus Iowa, you pretty much know them. And then it showed some of the formations where we had trouble the week before, that the team that possibly have a similar offense or so, what to look for and things like that. So you're right, and that's how it usually is. But with a team with Central Michigan, that's how upsets actually happens. And with, you know, regardless of whoever you're playing with, you know, you try to beat that bye week, and you know, where you have big games or so on. And bye weeks can, like you said, it can be a plus or a minus. And coming out as bye week, I really feel that the Coach Ferentz taking the ball first would do a good deal for us, regardless if we're able to go down and score or not, but just to get that offense out there on the field.
The reason I kind of bring this up as a topic, besides the fact that it is Iowa's bye week, is just going back to what I said earlier about the fact that, at least historically speaking, Iowa has had issues coming out of bye weeks and or the games that follow bye weeks. There have been some instances, like I mentioned the Michigan game a couple years ago, they were able to win, but even that was a slow start. Game against Illinois, game against Penn State last year, you know, and it's just maybe seeing if there's something to that, or if it's just the fact that it's just more like what the opponent's been able to do. And I guess the last question I'll ask you here before we get into the pick'em is, as a player, when you are in a bye week, I know you said you didn't have them often, but when you do have that opportunity, are you paying any attention at all? Like on that Saturday, I would imagine you're sitting back watching college football. Are you paying any attention at all right now, if you're an Iowa player, to that Michigan State game that they have at Indiana this Saturday? Or is that a game that you just completely try to avoid because you know you're going to be watching the film on it in the coming days?
It's funny that you ask. For the most part, when a lot of players usually try to have a good time, you know, go home, see their families and things like that. But me, I really didn't go home at all. But for the most part, I used to sit here and watch some film, you know, sit here and be able to watch it live or so, and also try to watch other games going on, not just Michigan State, but possibly a team after that. And, hey, coach, I got something from the game you guys probably never didn't catch or so, but for the most part, they usually catch the film and everything like that. But, yeah, I usually used to watch a lot of the film, and rather with special teams or defense, to be able to help Coach Parker or Coach Herb on special teams, and also Coach Wilson, you know, with punt return and kickoff and try to figure out. But some of the angles that they have nowadays with TV is a little different, so we're not able to catch everything in particular.
All right. Yeah, and I mean, I just, again, I wasn't sure if that's something that, for the most part, guys is just like, yeah, they want to focus intently on Michigan State, or if it's something, yeah, I would just want to enjoy the day, and if I see another game, I just want to avoid them and watch other games and enjoy those, because I know that Sunday, Monday, that's a film that you're going to be watching, and you're going to obviously get a better perspective as a player. So we'll move along now, because this is the bye week. We don't have a guest this week, so this is the only segment we're going to do, and we're going to jump right into the pick 'em here. Before we do, I want to congratulate Tim Carty of Iowa City on winning last week's pick 'em. He won a tiebreaker, and it's amazing. There was the tiebreaker, the two scores, they had the same point total for Iowa. The differential was one. He had 17-13. The other person had 17-14. So, Tim, 1 point made the difference. Congratulations on winning the pick'em. Your prize should get to you this week. As far as our picks last week, you went 9-1. You almost had a perfect record. Virginia Tech gave up that last minute touchdown to Cincinnati. It kept you from going 10-0. But the two games we did disagree on, you got right. Miami beating NC State and Ohio State getting the win up in East Lansing this past Saturday.
Yeah, it's just one of those deals, you know, and you have some teams sitting here getting ready for bigger games, like a Miami getting ready for Notre Dame here primetime this week. Yeah, you don't look forward to that game, but you sit there in the moment, and that's what I look when Miami's playing. And I think personally, from what I actually seen them play, they're a pretty good team here. They're a pretty good team here, playing against a pretty good team here next week, this weekend, Notre Dame. But I really feel that now that they didn't win
we will get to the Miami-Notre Dame game, because that is one of the games on our pick'em. But before we get into our picks, just want to remind all of you, if you want to participate this week, you still have until Friday at 5 p.m. Central to do so. Just when you are on HawkeyeDrive.com, you'll see the page 24 Heisman Road. Hover over that. The pick'em page is right there. Click there. List of 10 games. Email your picks to HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. Because there isn't an Iowa game this week, I'm not going to ask for any scores to break any ties. If we have multiple winners, we have multiple winners. So this might be a good week for you, because if you have the record, winning record, chances are you might be in really good shape to win a prize. So just keep that in mind. And we will start in Big Ten play, as a matter of fact, with our first game, Northwestern, 5-0. They're in the top 25, now ranked 24th in the country, coming off their win against Indiana, Big Ten opener. They go out to Penn State, who's won three straight games. They absolutely slaughtered Illinois, like you and I both figured they would. This game is being played in Happy Valley. Is this a game that you see Northwestern getting to 6-0 and becoming the Big Ten's first bowl-eligible team? Or does Penn State keep it going here, going into its bye week before it comes here to play the Hawkeyes in 2 weeks?
One thing I was going to say with this game is this week might be a big upset week for me, and I really feel I'm going with the upset this week, just because I think the key comes down for Northwestern is Kane Coulter and how they actually use him, and is Penn State ready to use him. With them being at home, I'm going with Penn State. A really close game, and Penn State, you know, with three-game winning streak, they're ready to go. Mm-hmm. They're ready to go, and a lot of people sit here and felt that Penn State would be in disarray, feeling bad about themselves. I really felt that they weren't going to feel too bad about themselves, because they still have a season to play. So I'm going with Penn State over Northwestern.
I've kind of gone back and forth on this game, and I'm going to ultimately agree with you here on Penn State. And the reason why is Northwestern, I think, and to Northwestern's credit, this is the one team that, when I was, you know, looking over the Big Ten and gathering my preseason thoughts, this is the one team I've completely whiffed on this year. I did not expect them to, obviously, to be 5-0 at this point, and I didn't even think that they'd be a team that would end up going to a bowl game. But to their credit, Pat Fitzgerald's got them ready to play each and every week, and I think they figured out the situation with their quarterbacks, the fact that they can use two guys, and when they have Simeon in there, Kane Coulter can be utilized, you know, as a runner and as a receiver. So to their credit, I think that's significant. But all that being said, I think the key here is Northwestern has had struggles in the with pass defense, and that has been become a strength of Penn State's, amazingly, is Matt McGloin has shown that he has an arm. And I think the key for Penn State, though, is they're going to have to get other receivers involved besides Allen Robinson, but I feel like they'll be able to do that. And I think their defense is decent enough that they can keep Northwestern in check, and if that's the case, I think adding in the fact that this game is in State College, I think it all plays to Penn State's advantage, and that's why I agree with you on the Nittany Lions. So we agree there. Going into the SEC now for a 2:30 game, pair of top 10 teams going at it. LSU, ranked number 4, had some issues these last few weeks, but they've managed to stay undefeated. They're going into the swamp to take on a Florida team that's ranked 10th. It's coming off of a bye, 3-0 in the SEC at the moment, trying to stay in the thick of things in the SEC East. This a game, which one of these teams do you see remaining undefeated when it's all said and done?
I know going in, coming into before we had met here for the podcast, I told you that I felt that Florida won this game, you know, and it's not only that the game is in a swamp, it's for Florida to sit here and go back to prominence here in the SEC. And also, I figure that the bye week could help them out a lot, you know, being able to sit here and see Northwestern, but LSU struggle last week, and it's just one of those deals where LSU is a really good team, but at the same time, they lost a lot of guys from last year's team. And I just figure that with their coach and his defensive philosophies, and his defense has really picked it up here of late, and with the quarterback play, man, this is a prime game for them to actually win if they really want to get back to SEC dominance.
I'm going to go with LSU. For one reason, I did pick them to go to the national championship game. But besides that, I think even though they had the struggles, and last week they did look awful against Towson, even though they were able to win, I think that that's kind of the wake-up call. Then that's the motivation that Les Miles can use and say, hey, you know what? You can't play like this and expect to win at Florida. But I do think that this is a game where the defenses have both been good for these teams, so I expect it to kind of be a low-scoring game. And I just think at the end of the day, LSU's got a slightly better defense, and you know Les Miles has a few tricks up his sleeve. That's why I call him Mad Hatter. I think this is a week that he's going to pull one of those out, and when it's all said and done, I do think LSU's going to get out of there with a victory. But I think it's going to be a very close down-to-the-wire game, and I wouldn't be surprised if Florida won. But I just feel like I still need to see a little bit more from Florida's offense before completely going on board with that. Another game going on at 2:30 Saturday afternoon. Got Oklahoma, ranked 17th in the country. They're coming off of a bye week after losing at home to K-State. They're going down to Lubbock, Texas to take on a Texas Tech team that's currently 4-0. Just won at Iowa State this past weekend. And Texas Tech's also the same team that beat Oklahoma last year in Norman when the Sooners were ranked number 1 in the country and before their season completely fell off, although I guess it was sort of salvaged when they beat Iowa in the Insight Bowl. But this game, that Texas Tech, being undefeated, haven't had the win the year before against the Sooners, being at home, do you see the Red Raiders pulling it off here again, or does Oklahoma bounce back?
Texas Tech has been a team that's been giving Oklahoma problems outside of Kansas State here of late, last couple years. But I actually feel that Oklahoma needs this bounce back win, and they will get it. The key to them is pretty much their passing game, and also getting that running game going, because it's just one of those deals where Landry Jones has been having a rough year, and it's just one of those deals where he needs to really step up to that guy that we look for in the preseason.
So you got Oklahoma winning?
I'm taking Oklahoma.
I am taking Oklahoma as well, and I'll say this. I actually think this is where losing that game to Kansas State, I think, could be a benefit to them, because let's say they had won that game against K-State and they were coming into this 3-0. They play Texas next week in the Red River rivalry. You then would have to figure, okay, this would be a trap game. This is a game that if they don't pay attention, they don't, you know, focus on Texas Tech, this could be a prime upset. That's obviously not going to be the case now, because they've had 2 weeks to lament over losing at home, and Bob Stoops knows, okay, this is a team that beat them a year ago on their home field. They're not going to look past Texas Tech this week, and I do think Landry Jones will bounce back. I think the defense will play big. And to be completely honest with you, Yeah, Texas Tech won that game at Iowa State this past weekend, but outside of that, I haven't been completely impressed by what I've seen from them. I mean, yeah, they got off to a start that they needed, but to me, I just feel like they basically proved, okay, they may be the seventh or eighth best team in the Big 12 when it's all said and done, because that conference is completely stacked, almost top to bottom. But I do think that this is a game Oklahoma will be focused. I think Mike Stoops will have the defense ready, and I just think this is a game Oklahoma's not going to look past the Red Raiders, so I got the Sooners as well. Big Ten game happening at 3 o'clock, and amazingly, this is the only game on our slate this week that doesn't feature a ranked team one way or the other. Michigan and Purdue. These teams are playing at in West Lafayette. Big Ten opener for both teams, although Purdue played last week against Marshall. Michigan's coming off of a bye after its loss to Notre Dame. Is this a game? Does Michigan bounce back after the string of turnovers they had there against the Fighting Irish? Or is this when Purdue finally shows that, hey, they're for real, and this is the start of what could be a special season for them?
I really feel that this is a big game for both teams. You know, Denard Robinson, he has to return to the Denard Robinson we know as the electrifying player. You know, just be Denard Robinson. Let's not forget all that NFL and all this hype and stuff. You got to get back to the basics as Denard Robinson. With Purdue, they have Wisconsin next week. This is a big game. This is a big game for Purdue, you know, because they got Wisconsin coming in.
And then they got a trip to Ohio State the following. So, I mean, I feel like we're going to definitely learn a lot about the Boilermakers here over these next few weeks.
Yeah, and I was going to elaborate that, you know, I see Michigan winning this game because Michigan, if they want to sit here and still be in contention to sit here at a Big Ten championship, they have to win this game. It's a must, you know, against a pretty good team in Purdue. For Purdue, it's one of those deals where, like you say, if they want to go into that Big Ten championship game, they need to beat a Michigan team going into the Wisconsin game next week. So they have two very key games. They can't overlook Michigan, a really good Michigan team. I see Michigan winning this game.
Yeah, and I agree with you on Michigan winning. And I do think that they bounce back, not just because of Denard, but you think back to that game against Notre Dame 2 weeks ago. That defense played well enough to win. And I know that they've had their issues this year, but they played well enough to win that game against Notre Dame. And I will also throw in there, too, the fact that these teams played a year ago, and this is right before Michigan came to Iowa City to play the Hawkeyes. That was kind of the game that Fitz Toussaint emerged as Michigan's running back. He went over 200 yards rushing against the Boilermakers, who had a pretty decent defense a year ago as well as now. Right. And I think that him being able to complement Denard would be huge. And as long as Michigan doesn't turn the ball over, I think they'll be able to get out of there with a victory. But I do think it's going to be a tough game for him. But I agree. I think Michigan wins. Now moving into the night games, and there's some really good games Saturday night. We'll start with probably the biggest game of them all. Georgia, South Carolina. Bulldogs are ranked 5th. Gamecocks are ranked 6th. These teams are playing in Columbia. Game day's there. Both teams identical, 5-0 overall records, 3-0 records in the SEC. Winner probably has the upper hand along with Florida if they beat LSU. In the SEC East, pretty similar teams for the most part. What are your thoughts on this game, and how do you see it ultimately shaking?
I figure this is huge for both teams in different perspectives. For Georgia, it's a chance at a national title. You know, and sit here and say, hey, we're back into this national title picture here, and, you know, with a lot of people sitting here trying to get rid of Mark Richt. But for Steve Spurrier, it's just one of those deals where Steve Spurrier has one of the roughest schedules here going into the end of the season, where he can challenge for the East and whatnot, but I don't see him going being a national title contender just like a Georgia team. But this game is at home. They play tough. I still figure that Connor Shaw has to play a really big game. I'm still worried about his arm injury. So I'm going to go with Georgia on the road. And Georgia has a lot to prove to sit here. And because they got thumped last year against LSU. And they want to return back to where they were and go farther.
I got South Carolina winning this game because I honestly, for some of the reasons that you mentioned, I think the Gamecocks need this game more. Because you look at South Carolina's schedule. They play Georgia here this Saturday at home. Then they got to go to LSU next week, and then they got to go to Florida the following week. So right there, I mean, just for the pure fact that you need to win this game just in order to, you know, keep pace with Georgia, who has a much lighter schedule compared to South Carolina. This is one of those games where if Georgia does win, I feel like they're pretty much – the Florida game is all that stands between them and being in the SEC title game. But I look at it this way. I think South Carolina gets it done because I think Marcus Lattimore comes up big. And what – you know, Georgia, they got all those guys back on defense from the suspensions and injuries. But they also gave up 44 points to Tennessee last week. And yeah, it is. But, you know, you look at South Carolina, I think as long as Connor Shaw can, you know, manage the game like he's proven he can, and they could just feed the ball with Marcus Lattimore, who had a big game against Georgia last year. And then you look at the other side of the ball, you get Jadeveon Clowney sparking that defense. I think South Carolina has just enough to get this done, but I expect this to be a really entertaining game for sure. But at the end, I do think the Gamecocks get it done.
But what I was going to say to defend both teams in a way where I pretty much don't win at all is that both teams actually struggled last week. South Carolina struggled with Kentucky, which Kentucky just couldn't sit there and slit South Carolina's throat. And then you had a good Tennessee offense, and which Tennessee has what I feel that South Carolina doesn't have is really good receivers. But at the same time, South Carolina has a really good running back who hasn't had a big game yet. He has had really good games, but he hasn't had that big game yet. So, like, that's why I agree with you with a nice good dose of Marcus Lattimore can actually be the difference maker of this game.
Yeah, I will say, I think maybe depending on your definition of good game or great game, I feel like that game against Vanderbilt, he was kind of – him and Clowney both were kind of difference makers for them, and as well as Connor Shaw. But I think as long as Shaw's in there and he, you know, can just manage the game like he has and, you know, hit guys downfield when the opportunities present itself because Georgia loads up the box, I do think South Carolina has enough here, especially at home, to get it done against Georgia. But like I said, it should be a really good game. Yeah.
Oh. I was going to actually abbreviate on this. Is if Connor Shaw start this game like he finished last week, man, this might be a rough win for Georgia. Yeah. 20 for 20, wow.
Yeah. Well, I think it was 2 weeks ago against Missouri, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other game going on at the same time that I know you'll have a keen interest on is West Virginia going down to Texas. The Mountaineers ranked 8th after winning a ridiculous shootout. 70-63, they beat Baylor. It just, some of the numbers from that game are just mind-boggling. But and we'll get to Geno Smith here in a second. But they go down to Austin to take on a Texas team that managed to pull it out last week against Oklahoma State on the road. And they obviously play Oklahoma next week. So this is kind of – they're in the midst of a brutal stretch here. But – the Longhorns do get this game at home. In my opinion, and I said this at the beginning of the season, I felt like these are the two best teams in the conference. Does West Virginia, can they keep it going here against a Texas defense that's at least, you know, more formidable than, say, Baylor? Or is this a game where the Longhorns, you know, do just enough to contain Geno Smith and not allow him to, you know, put up 600-something passing yards and 800 yards of total offense? I mean, it's ridiculous. And right now, he's got to be the front runner for the Heisman. But as far as how you see this game?
I actually see this game being played tough, you know. I would say the over-under would probably be about 60 points. The reason why I say 60 points is because we know that West Virginia is going to score. We know they have the offense to score to sit here. But Texas defense is sitting there shaking their heads like, no, we're not going to let them score so many points. But at the same time, when you're going against a pass rate offense, you're going to give up something. Either it's going to be the run or either the pass. But that's one thing about West Virginia. They've been actually able to run the ball and actually been able to pass the ball. Their defense is pretty much the key. I think the Texas offense and the West Virginia defense, defensive backs has been playing terrible over the last couple weeks here. I talked to my brother about it, and he sit here and say, hey, our defensive coordinator is pretty much furious about our defensive backs here playing the way they play, giving up 300 yards to one receiver here. But the receiver that they gave it up to was a pretty daggone good receiver this past week against Baylor. I also see that Geno Smith, looking at those stats from last week, if he put up 400 yards passing, I think this week against a really good Texas defense, I'd be pretty impressed. But if Geno Smith put up some ridiculous numbers, I really feel that West Virginia win this game. And also, Texas lost their starting running back. A lot of people sitting here and sitting here like, wow, Texas has been able to run the ball here pretty good, but David Ash is a leader, and I actually see David Ash playing a really good game. But I'm going with West Virginia. This is a big springboard for them to get ready for the next couple weeks against a tough Oklahoma State on the road and also Oklahoma here.
Yeah, I agree with you on West Virginia here, even though the game is down in Austin. And I do agree, too, with Texas that David Ash has emerged as a guy that's become a legitimate quarterback for them. And I still think at the end of the day that Texas will wind up being a team that wins 9 or 10 games and could very well be a BCS at large. I think the Big 12 is in good shape to get two teams in BCS bowls, and I would think that they would be second. But I think this West Virginia right now, to me, is the best team in the conference. I think they're going to continue to show, even though the defense had its issues last week, as you mentioned, the fact that they really just need to get just a couple of stops. That's probably their mindset is just, okay, if they can get, say, they could just keep Texas off the board, say, 3 or 4 times. They have their quarterback in Geno Smith, who's putting up gaudy numbers. They have the receivers. They have the playmakers. And as you said, they're going to eventually get points in some way, shape, or form. This isn't – Texas has as good as Texas's defense is, I don't think it's good enough to just completely, manhandle West Virginia and keep them under, say, like 30 points. That's just not going to happen. So I do think at the end of the day, the Mountaineers have just a little bit more in the tank, and I think that they're able to get it done. And again, the winner of this game, pretty much, in my opinion, is the inside track to win in the Big 12. And I just think West Virginia, they're in good shape right now. And the way they're rolling, especially on the offensive side of the ball, it's very telling.
Oh, yeah. And like you say, Texas is probably the best defense that, like, West Virginia will face against. Who knows who they play in a bowl game. But Texas, that defensive line is ridiculous. And we will see the true Geno Smith, if he's a guy that's antsy trying to get rid of the ball and makes mistakes here. Or is it the Geno Smith for the last couple weeks? Will it be Geno Smith for the last week? We just never know. And I feel that he's going to put up some good mm-hmm. numbers. But like you say, I think with them – is West Virginia defensive backs and also their running backs the key for West Virginia to win and for Texas, David Ash sitting there being that leader.
And I'll just say this about Geno Smith, regardless of what the numbers end up being, if he's just able to, pull off a couple big drives late in the game and they're able to get out of there with a victory on Saturday night, it's impressive enough that he's the way it shapes up. If West Virginia wins the Big 12, he's going to win the Heisman Trophy at that point in time because, as we mentioned, back at the beginning of the season, I made mention of an article I had seen earlier in the summer about how not just people around West Virginia and that part of the country are going to be taking notice, but everybody in the Big 12 portion of the country and along the plains and down in Texas. It's going to become more and more apparent just what he's doing in that kind of conference. And then you throw in the fact, too, that comparing his numbers at this point in time to RG3's numbers at Baylor at this point, a season ago, across the board, they're pretty much better than what RG3 had done. So right now, he's been the X factor for them this year. And if West Virginia wins, and I think we both agree that they will, as long as he's able to keep it going and they're able to keep winning, it's going to be hard to picture anybody else holding that trophy come December. Moving along now to a game that's taking place at Soldier Field in Chicago Saturday night. You got Notre Dame, ranked number 9 in the country, coming off of a bye after beating Michigan. They're taking on a Miami team that made you look good last week, and they've been clicking lately. They're 4-1 overall, and in the ACC they're 3-0. They're coming off that win over NC State. Is Miami, can they keep it going and pull off a big upset here, or is Notre Dame, is this something where that bye week came at a good time for them, and considering the success Miami's had, that they're not going to lose focus of Miami and be able to get a win?
I think this bye week has come at a pretty good time for Notre Dame just because they've been playing off a lot of emotions with their leader on the defensive side. And also, I feel that Notre Dame has been playing. This is one of those teams you sit here and be like, is the bye week a really good time at all, because they've been playing at a high note all season long. But I feel that Miami is Miami of old in a way. It's the time for them to sit here and renew this rivalry here for the next couple of years. And take this one and take it. I really feel that they'll win this game. It's not too cold for Miami to sit here and be able to fold, but I really feel that this is time for Miami to sit here and say, hey, it's our time. We'll see you guys in the next couple of years here in the ACC. But at the same time, Notre Dame is sitting here, hey, we have a nice little year going on. But I see that they win the game on the road.
I will say this. If Miami does win, that I think people have to start considering them as the favorite in their division instead of Virginia Tech, especially when you consider that they play Virginia Tech at home later in the year. But besides that point, I'm going to disagree and take Notre Dame because the thing that you mentioned about the bye week coming at a good time for them, and not just for the defense and for Manti Te'o and everything he's had to deal with, but also, too, with the quarterback situation. You know, the fact that Tommy Rees had to come in that game against Michigan for Everett Golson, it's allowed Golson time to, you know, get back on his feet, if you will, and, you know, they can go back to him Saturday night. And I'll say this, too. Miami, for whatever reason, the fans haven't been showing up for him down there. You factor in this game being in Chicago. I know it's considered a neutral field, but for all intents and purposes, this is a Notre Dame home game because South Bend's only, you know, a couple hours away. And I actually do think the weather will play somewhat of a factor. I mean, it depends on not so much the forecast, but just consider that Soldier Field, where it's situated, it's right along Lake Michigan. So you're going to have a breeze effect there. And the fact that this game is being played at night, I feel like if this was earlier in the day, then that wouldn't be a factor at all. And I think that Miami would be able to, you know, be okay with that. But it is going to be colder than what those guys are used to down there in South Florida, unless there are days like when you played in the Orange Bowl and that was a cold game. But I feel like that's going to play to Notre Dame, especially considering the strength of that team has been their defense to this point. Normally, defensive players, you seem to like playing in colder weather more than you would if you're an offensive guy. And I just think that all those things combined with the fact that Notre Dame has it clicking right now, and this is the kind of game that if they're going to be a BCS team, you win this game, and then you move along. And I think the Fighting Irish get it done.
I was going to say, let's not forget that I know these guys that are playing for Miami is not the same guys that played in the Big East. Right. Miami has been playing in some cold weather, right. You know, down the stretch or whatnot. But I feel with their quarterback play, you know, their quarterback feeling good about himself, that Miami has the best chance, you know, at this game. But at the same time, I feel that if Rees start and he struggles, I feel that Notre Dame's going to struggle just because you can't go back to that freshman and say, hey, give me a spark because his, right. I think his confidence is already shot.
I think Golson is starting.
Okay. Because I was going to say, if Golson's not starting, they're down. I mean, if you're going back to the freshman, which you went to Rees when the freshman is actually struggling, you sit here and be like, oh, God, I got to be Superman or so. And that's one of those deals where I figure that Notre Dame actually won it. Not Notre Dame, but Miami won it. Game. It's just one of those deals. That quarterback situation can be a big disaster if things fall apart.
Yeah, I mean, I've been impressed by what Miami's been able to do aside from the beatdown they got at K-State, but again, I just think Notre Dame's a slightly better team, and with this game being up in Chicago, I think it plays to their advantage, so I'm going to go with them there. But I will say, though, with Miami, one of the reasons why they were able to beat NC State last week is because they had a 566-yard passing performance from their quarterback, Stephen Morris, which you consider that's a school record, and you think back on all the quarterbacks that Miami's had over the years, guys like Bernie Kosar, Vinny Testaverde, Gino Toretta, guys that have won the Heisman Trophy, and he's the one, and Stephen Morris is the guy that's setting that kind of record. That's pretty impressive, and that is kind of the perfect segue to the next game here because it features NC State and that defense that amazingly gave up all those yards through the air to the Hurricanes. They not only lost that game, but now they got to bounce back and play at home Saturday night against Florida State, who's ranked third in the country, who did enough to beat South Florida last week. And right now, I mean, the Seminoles, they look like a team that could very well, yeah, you called it. They look like a team that is on a path and on a mission to be in that national championship game down in Miami in January. I don't see how NC State wins this game here. At the beginning of the season, I thought NC State could be a team that could, you know, maybe hang with teams like Florida State and Clemson in a division, but I just haven't seen it from this team in the big games that they have played to this point. And David Hammerson's kind of been a disappointment to me here. I thought, you know, last year, especially he had the 13 interception season. I felt coming into this year, he was one of the top corners, if not the top corner in the entire country. And he's the guy that got burned on that late touchdown that Miami threw in that game last week. I don't know. NC State has not played up to the expectations that I kind of had set for him here. And I, even though they're at home, I think they're going to have some struggles. I think Florida State's going to keep rolling here, so I like the Seminoles.
I agree with you. This is, like I said, he's my national champions here. This I can't renege on it now, but like I told you last week, Florida State was going to struggle. It was going to be a struggle just coming off a really good game, you know, at night and so on. But South Florida is not a team you sit there and – you know, pretty much stomp on or whatnot. South Florida has been playing all the other big Florida schools pretty tough, no matter what, where the actual area is that they're playing. They feel like they're a big school just like Florida State, Miami's, and Florida's. So I'm going with Florida State to win this game. Damon Emerson, he's had one of the toughest seasons as being a big-time cornerback this year. But at the same time, let's not forget, people are going to test this guy. They're going to test him just to figure out, like, all right, is this the same guy that had all these picks last year? But, you know, it's just one of those deals when you test that guy, you're pretty much testing everybody else because that's the best player on your defense. So I figure that they have pretty much let up a lot of points this week also.
Yeah. And then moving along, we've got two more games left here on our pick 'em slate. Going back into the Big Ten, probably the biggest game of the weekend in the conference Saturday night. Got Nebraska, ranked 21st, coming off that come-from-behind victory against Wisconsin last weekend in Lincoln. They're heading to the Horseshoe to take on Ohio State, who pulled off that victory last week against Michigan State on the road. And I'm taking Ohio State here, and I'll just say, keep it real simple. One, I was very impressed with what I saw from Braxton Miller there and the poise he showed, particularly on that touchdown pass to Devin Smith in the third quarter of that game last week. You consider that last year these teams played in Lincoln. Ohio State had that 3-touchdown lead, and then Miller got hurt, and they went to Joe Bousserman, and Nebraska was able to come from behind and win 34-27. You know, you fast forward to this past week, and went to Nebraska. They're down 27-10 in the second half against Wisconsin. They find a way to win that game. You cannot afford to get behind double digits against this Ohio State team this year, especially in that stadium, because I think what this game ultimately comes down to is Ohio State is a slightly better defense, and it's going to be a situation where, yeah, Nebraska might be able to move the ball, but I think they're going to have a struggle scoring, and I think Ohio State's offense will do just enough against Nebraska's defense to get points on the board and prevail. And then you combine all that with the revenge factor in this game being in the Horseshoe. I don't see Ohio State losing this game. And as I said before, now that they did win that game against Michigan State, I have a hard time seeing a loss on this team's schedule going forward. Maybe at the end of the season they play Wisconsin or Michigan, but right now, I mean, I look at least these, like, next five games. I don't see them losing any of them. So I think Ohio State's going to win, and they're going to just keep rolling.
I thought with the schedule that Ohio State has outside of the Michigan game, that pretty much nothing means anything. You know, you throw out the records or so on. I thought Nebraska is going to be the team that Ohio State will sit here and pencil because, you know, I mean, going that undefeated season like Urban Meyer was looking for going into the season or whatnot, they didn't forget about what happened down there in Nebraska or whatnot. And also last year, the Michigan State was the team, the game that Ohio State had struggled with and pretty much took their season down and went downhill. I think this year, the Michigan State game is the opposite for Ohio State. You know, you sit here and turn the pages. Hey, we got a pretty solid team. You know, you won a shoot. I mean, you run a old school football game last week here on a road. You know, and Michigan State they played a really good game. They played a really good game. I really feel that it was going to be a tough game. You know, Ohio State knew that they weren't going to score a lot of points, but you needed someone to actually step up in that game, and I felt that Ohio State defense stepped up, and also Braxton Miller. I would start to scratch my head when Braxton Miller actually went down and sitting here like, uh-oh, here we go. This can turn a whole nother way for Ohio State. But with that being said, I figured Ohio State's going to win this game. It's just one of those deals. You're feeling good about yourself, and you don't want to feel too good about yourself at the same time. But Ohio State, like you say, any team that beat Ohio State at Ohio State usually has played a really good game. You know, of the past teams that beat them, you know, you have Penn State, you had Illinois. Those teams came in there and they pretty much ran the clock out, and they played a stellar game overall collectively. And I think that's what Nebraska has to do. They can't play like they played last week, where I was sitting here scratching my head like, wow, they let Wisconsin pretty much come there, destroy them all first half, and their fans just in disarray. I've never seen anything like this. And at Nebraska, when Nebraska's a pretty good team outside of it, when Bill Callahan was there, and right. things just went just right. downward or whatnot. But I look for Ohio State win a pretty tough game.
And there's also the dynamic here. This Bo Pelini, with him being a former Ohio State player and going back home, if you will, Saturday. So there's that storyline as well. But it's kind of a shame that Ohio State has this postseason ban this year, just in the sense that right at least to this point, I don't know if it'll ultimately play out this way over the course of the next few months, but to this point, I feel like these two teams, and I say this with all due respect to Northwestern, I feel like these have been the two most impressive teams in the conference, you know, especially Nebraska on the offensive side of the ball, the way Taylor Martinez has been able to improve in the passing game, even though his mechanics are still kind of iffy. But I won't say he's skipping rocks like the Wisconsin defensive lineman, David Gilbert, but he has gotten better, and I think Nebraska probably has the best offense in the conference at this point. But Ohio State, I think Simon and Hankins both have big games here for the Buckeyes, and I agree with you on Ohio State winning. And then finally, the last game, and this is 9:30 kickoff Central Time. You got Washington, who moved into the top 25 after beating Stanford last week at home in that Thursday night game. They're going down to Outzen Stadium to take on number 2 Oregon, who handled its business against Washington State last week. And, you know, Washington, I give Washington credit for pulling off that win against Stanford, but I felt like Stanford lost that game more than Washington won it. And I don't know if it's just the fact that the game is in Seattle or on a Thursday night, or the fact that maybe Stanford got a little bit full of themselves after beating USC a few weeks ago or what. But, you know, Washington, they are able to come back and win that game, but I don't see this team necessarily being a top 25 team. And now you're asking them to go down, carrying the whatever momentum they do have, going down to Oregon to take on a Duck team that's just rolling and just presents completely different dynamics from what Stanford does. I just don't see it. I got the Ducks winning at home, and this one could get ugly. Maybe not as ugly as when Washington lost to LSU, but I definitely think this is a double-digit victory heading Oregon's way.
I was going to say, this game for Washington is a big game, you know, in all perspectives. You know, last year was a really good game with Washington playing Oregon. But at the same time, I figure that this is not last year. No. And also that Washington has a couple extra days of rest, and on in preparation for Oregon, but I think that Washington has set themselves up for a thrashing here, and they're on a road. And let's not forget, Keith Price played well last week, but I figure that he has to play flawlessly against Oregon, and their defense has to play. I mean, any defense that plays against Oregon has to play. But I figure that Oregon has been clicking on all cylinders. You can't find too many flaws. I mean, if they have any flaws, you look at their defense, but their defense has been playing at a high level.
Right. And, you know, I think Washington could probably put up points in this game, but again, I think that that's a product of Oregon's defense. But you go back to last week. Stanford, they looked pretty bad on offense. And then they had the penalties that were called on them defensively late in that game that, you know, allowed Washington to pick up first downs and win. I just think Oregon is going to be a little bit more disciplined, especially with, again, the fact that they're at home. If this game is being played in Seattle, I would probably still pick the Ducks to win, but I'd at least give it a little bit more thought regarding the Huskies, because, you know, you have home field and, you know, it could be a closer game. But, yeah, but going down to Eugene, I just don't see it. So I agree with you. I think Oregon wins. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Talking Hawks podcast. Chris, I want to thank you as always. You can follow him on Twitter at CRowell34. You can follow me on Twitter at TheBStyles. And you can follow HawkeyeDrive.com on Twitter at HawkeyeDrive. We'll be back again next week, and we'll hopefully have a guest joining us to discuss Michigan State. But we'll preview Iowa's game against Michigan State as well as preview the games on next week's Pick'em. And a reminder to all of you, if you are interested in becoming a member of HawkeyeDrive.com, we offer a 3-day free trial as well as monthly and yearly subscriptions, $9.99 a month, $89.99 a year. Payments are recurring, and they give you the subscriptions give you access to all the content on the site, both premium and free. For Chris, I'm Brendan. We'll be back next week. Have a good weekend.